Truth News Radio Australia, coming to you on the 7th of August 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show. It's great to have your company. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. My name's Hereward Fenton, and I'll be running through some stories. I've got a couple of people scheduled to join us during the time. In the second hour, I've got regular commentator Josh Jackson coming on for the full hour to talk about a really interesting subject. I want to explore the history of the internet with an angle on it to try and understand where things have kind of gone wrong. How did it happen that we got these monolithic mega corporations basically running the show, when in fact the internet was originally a great medium for people to communicate and do their own thing and be quite independent? I want to kind of go through the history of how the internet evolved, how the software and technologies on the internet evolved, and understand that from a philosophical, economic point of view, to see, well, actually this was a phenomenon of the consolidation of corporate power, along with the tendencies to tyranny that we see with government. It's that same pattern that we've seen with fascism. It's basically corporatism that allows the big players in any kind of economy, any kind of industry, to sweep everything up, to take over, to take more control. And as they take more control, you know, initially it seems okay. It seems like they're providing great services, and, you know, often they're providing free things. Another analogy to that might even be television. I mean, look at television. It was given to us free, wasn't it, at the end of the Second World War? And who could argue with that? Who could complain about that? It was a wonderful technology, but also they gave it to us free. You didn't have to pay. Although in the UK you do actually pay, but that's a different story. In the UK they actually have a license, I believe, which is required for the BBC. But in most parts of the world, television is actually completely free. And similarly with the internet, so many aspects of what we do on the internet are now governed by programs which are provided to us completely free. And there's all kinds of hidden catches in there. And as we've seen with the latest unfolding scandals over the NSA and the Edward Snowden story, you know, those pitfalls are pretty big. And we have to really think about, you know, is the trade-off acceptable? I would argue no. I think we really do need to start deliberately, consciously steering away from simply using products that are given to us because they're free. And it's hard because our tendency is to take things that are offered. People are busy with their lives. They don't have a lot of time to invest in kind of learning to be expert in, say, designing a web page, or, you know, building a discussion forum, or setting up their own email servers and all these things that you can actually do to bypass the NSA surveillance. But, I mean, unfortunately, you know, it is really going to be necessary that that some people, at least for the benefit of others, start to really put more effort into this. And I want to go through in today's show and to look at what might be done, what has been done, and what could be done in the future. I want to look a little at open source software, which we'll do in the second hour. I want to look at the difference between open source and the sort of free software which is given to us by mega corporations, because open source is a totally different concept, a much more empowering concept, a much less corporatist phenomenon, because open source empowers the individual, it empowers the entrepreneur. And I believe that if we start to see, we've seen fantastic developments in open source, but I think with the scandals over NSA surveillance, I think we might start to see more in that direction, and I think we might start to see a kind of a wind down in the total dominance of the big players in the internet. And I'm thinking of, you know, the major areas of social networking and communications and email. I think there may start to be some changes. But In the meantime, we have a lot of very dark and disturbing things that we need to consider and cover too. And I want to actually play to you a little bit from an interview that was conducted on PBS in the US, because it covers some aspects of the NSA surveillance question which had not been covered before, and it includes interviews with two whistleblowers who have actually been on a number of interviews in the past, and I've had them on this show. One of them is William Binney and the other is Russell Tice. And in this particular interview, they're much more candid about the possibilities of what the NSA is actually doing. And they come straight out and say that that they believe that the NSA is basically storing everything. They're not just storing metadata, folks. They're keeping the whole lot. But I want to play that for you now so you hear it from the horse's mouth, as it were. And we'll be back at the end of this segment with another interview with a contributor to this show by the name of Luke McKee, who's going to be joining us for some to share some of his research into some areas of importance that he's discovered. But just stand by while we get this interview with PBS up for you.
And we pick up on the continuing fallout from the revelations of former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Last night, we debated the role of the Foreign Surveillance Intelligence Court, which approves the government's request to gather intelligence information on Americans. Tonight, we have a conversation with three former NSA officials, a former inspector general, and two NSA veterans who blew the whistle on what they say were abuses and mismanagement at the secret government intelligence agency. William Binney worked at the NSA for over three decades as a mathematician, where he designed systems for collecting and analyzing large amounts of data. He retired in 2001. Russell Tice had a two-decade career with the NSA, where he focused on collection and analysis. He says he was fired in 2005 after calling on Congress to provide greater protection to whistleblowers. He claims the NSA tapped the phone of high-level government officials and the news media 10 years ago.
The United States were, at that time, using satellites to spy on American citizens. At that time, it was news organizations, the State Department, including Colin Powell, and an awful lot of senior military people and industrial types.
The early 2000s.
This was in 2002, 2003 timeframe. The NSA were targeting individuals. In that case, they were judges like the Supreme Court. I held in my hand Judge Alito's targeting information for his phones and his staff and his family.
Bill Binney, what was your sense of who was being targeted and why they were being targeted, and what was being collected, in other words?
Well, I wasn't aware of specific targeting like Russ was, but I just saw the inputs were including hundreds of millions of records of phone calls of U.S. citizens every day. So it was virtually, there wasn't anybody who wasn't a part of this collection of information. So virtually you could target anybody in the country you wanted.
Both Binney and Tice suspect that today the NSA is doing more than just collecting metadata on calls made in the U.S. They both point to this CNN interview by former FBI counterterrorism agent Tim Clementi, days after the Boston Marathon bombing. Clementi was asked if the government had a way to get the recordings of the calls between Tamerlan Tsarnaev and his wife.
On the national security side of the house, in the federal government, you know, we have assets. There's lots of assets at our disposal throughout the intelligence community, and also not just domestically but overseas. Those assets allow us to gain information and intelligence on things that we can't use ordinarily in a criminal investigation. All digital communications there's a way to look at digital communications in the past. And I can't go into detail of how that's done or what's done, but I can tell you that no digital communication is secure.
Tice says after he saw this interview on television, he called some former workmates at the NSA.
Well, 2 months ago, I contacted some colleagues at NSA. We had a little meeting, and the question came up, was NSA collecting everything now? Because we kind of figured that was the goal all along. And the answer came back was yes, they're collecting everything, content, word for word, everything of every domestic communication in this country.
Both of you know what the government says is that we're collecting this, we're collecting the number of phone calls that are made, the emails, but we're not listening to it.
Well, I don't believe that for a minute, okay? So, I mean, that's why they had to build Bluffdale, that facility in Utah, with that a massive amount of storage that could store all this recordings and all of the data being passed along the fiber optic networks of the world. I mean, you could store roughly 100 years of the world's communications there. So that's for content storage. That's not for metadata. Metadata, if you were doing and putting into the systems we built, you could do it in a 12 by 20 foot room. For the world. That's all the space you'd need. You don't need 100,000 square feet of storage that they have at Bluffdale to do that. You need that kind of storage for content.
So what does that say, Russell Tice, about what your understanding is of what the government does once these conversations take place? Is it your understanding they're recorded and kept?
Yes, digitized and recorded and archived in a facility that's now online, and they're kind of fibbing about that as well, because Bluffdale's online right now, and that's where the information's going. Now, as far as being able to have an analyst look at all that, that's impossible, of course, and I think semantically they're trying to say that their definition of collection is having literally a physical analyst look or listen, which would be disingenuous.
But the government vehemently denies it is recording all telephone calls. Robert Litt is the general counsel in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He recently spoke at the Brookings Institution.
We do not indiscriminately sweep up and store the contents of the communications of Americans or of the citizenry of any country. We do collect metadata, information about communications, more broadly than we collect the actual content of communications. But that's because it's less intrusive than collecting content, and in fact can provide us information that helps us more narrowly focus our collection of content on appropriate foreign intelligence targets. But it simply is not true that the United States government is listening to everything said by the citizens of any country.
Joel Brenner, who was the NSA's inspector general and then senior legal counsel, says the intelligence agency obeys the law and the directions of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
It's really important to understand that NSA hasn't done anything, as I understand it and from all I know, that goes one inch beyond what it's been authorized to do by a court.
So tell us, how extensive is the NSA's collection of data on American citizens, on their phone calls, on their emails, on their use of the internet?
This is, you know, the program only involves telephony metadata, not emails, not geographic location information. The idea that NSA is keeping files on Americans as a general rule just isn't true.
And we'll just have to leave it there. We're going to break, and when we come back, I'll have my guest, Luke McKee, for an interview about some very startling and disturbing research that he's done. Do stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio. It's a great pleasure having your company today. And please check us out if you get a chance at truthnews.com.au. We've got a lot of great material there.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Okay, we've got a new topic here to look at today, and it's a tricky one. A couple of weeks ago, I did a story on the shocking revelations about the little boy who had been essentially bought by some gay pedophiles who were living in Australia. One of them was American, one of them was Australian, and the boy had literally been bought and had actually previous to that been traded around other pedophiles and had been used in pornography and was actually used by this couple in pornography, which they shared on a pedophile network called boylovers.net. A really sick, bizarre and weird story. Now, the little boy had actually been acquired from Russia. And, you know, we've heard a lot in the news about Russia's anti-gay crackdown recently. But what we haven't heard about is these stories, like the one about the little boy who was just treated like, you know, just a piece of meat and just traded around in the most horrendous way. But we hear a tremendous amount of news about how terrible the Russian government is about gay people. And I think there's an imbalance there. It's like there's a complete bias in the way the media is treating this, because I do think that that horrific story about the little boy did influence policy changes in Russia, and one of them being the laws about the adoption of Russian-born children. And on July 3, which was around about the time that the story about the little boy came out, Mr. Putin signed a law banning the adoption of Russian-born children, not only to gay couples, but also to any couple or single parent living in any country where marriage equality exists in any form. In other words, not only if you are gay, but if you come from a country that acknowledges gay marriage, you cannot adopt a child. It's a very harsh rule. But then look at what happened to that little kid, and you got to start thinking about it. What is the reality here? Now, a few other laws that have been recently passed in Russia. There's a law that allows police officers to arrest tourists and foreign nationals they suspect of being homosexual, lesbian, or pro-gay and detain them up to 14 days. Well, you know, I don't think that sounds good. I'm just saying, you know, that's part of it. Another anti-gay bill which classifies homosexual propaganda as pornography. The law is broad and vague, according to the New York Times, so that any teacher who tells students that homosexuality is not evil, and any parents who tell their child that homosexuality is normal, or anyone who makes pro-gay statements deemed accessible to someone underage, is now subject to arrest and fines. Now, I'd like to bring into the discussion Luke McKee, who's been on this show before and did some original research into the story about the homosexual pedophile network that we covered a couple of weeks ago on this show. Luke, what's your take on the current developments we see in Russia?
Well, if you see the video, which is on the truthnews.com.au homepage, my comment in response to you read the video, it's got a lot of captions in it that quotes from media around the world, including Russia, so we can get the full picture, not just the presentation the ABC made that you played in last week's program. Now, the take on it in Russia is like this. I just talked to my Russian friend from Kyrgyzstan, and also from media reports, there was a grassroots movement in Russia and protests in the street as the result of Russian news covering the abuse, first of Yanni Nikolaev, who died in a car in America, and that was a heterosexual parent. And then there was other cases, and I believe it was the Australian matter and the other cases which led to the ban on gay adoptions. My friend tells me that even in Russia today, if someone is a pedophile and has been singled out as one in the media, there is great risk to that person of being lynched. And so the Russian people do take this very seriously from what I've heard. I've heard about 80% of Russian people would probably be behind Putin on his reforms, especially on the gay adoption front. Now, this Russian boy was raped from 2 months old, according to the New York Daily Post. And, you know, Stalin said, you know, millions of deaths is a statistic, and one death is a tragedy. And in Australia, we had our own media frenzy over an alleged baby overboard that was faked. And we all saw how the population, how the democracy functioned over the boat people saga. And myself, being a refugee from Australia, I sympathise with some genuine refugees coming to Australia. And if anyone should be angry at anything, it should be that the plane people and the 457 visas that are excessive, even 457 visas for hairdressers. But people aren't talking about that.
Yeah,
that's how the media works. So Russia's had their own media frenzy over this. And people were angry, and their democracy functioned. And now we have change.org in America trying to break off diplomatic relations with Russia and end sister city agreements with Russia over these laws that you've mentioned. And they're just basically spitting in the face of Russian democracy.
Yeah, and it's sort of being framed to us as, well, you know, it's the wicked Russian government. And, of course, this dovetails nicely with propaganda against Russia in the wake of Edward Snowden and the, you know, basically the diplomatic standoff between the US and America. And, of course, there's a propaganda coup there for American foreign policy when they say, well, you know, not only are they aiding and abetting this this traitor NSA leaker, they're also anti-gay, you know, and so it all weaves together into one big propaganda message. But the real message about the problem with these gay pedophile networks is being completely ignored, isn't it?
Well, let's just be go to the numbers here and talk about statistics. Now, this is a very touching issue. You get in big trouble if you mention the H and the P words together. The statistics are in Australia, there were 10,000 gay families in 1996. In 2001, there was 20,000, and it's probably been rising exponentially. Right. In that video, we saw two foreign homosexual gays using Australia as a springboard to get a passport for a child to take around the world. Now, you can't really block gay adoption is one thing, but even then, without gay, Russia had to do this because even if there was no gay adoption ban, you know, single parents pretending to be heterosexual or doing false claims of surrogacy or being the biological father, which is what happened with forged documents and this case of the two gay men, will happen. So there has to They have to, the Russian government, to protect their younger citizens from gay pedophiles, has to include a ban on all heterosexuals from gay marriage countries with gay marriage.
Yeah. I can understand now, it. It's logical. Sure. Yeah.
Now, there's a study, probably the most cited study in the world, a medical study, on the topic of gay marriage. Let me just bring it up here. It's the proportions of, study on homosexual pedophiles. It's the proportions of heterosexual and homosexual pedophiles among sex offenders against children, an exploratory study by the Department of Behavioral Sexology, Park Institute of Psychiatry, Toronto. It's been referenced so many times, it's not funny. And it does say that, male offenders are much more common than female.
Luke, we are just going to break. That's a really, really interesting research you've done there. And when we get back from the break, we'll go into more of that. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We're talking about some quite disturbing aspects of the gay, debate and what's been happening in Russia. Stay with us, we'll be right back.
Man to man is so unjust. Children
Mikey with Truth News Radio. And I'm discussing gay rights in Russia with my guest Luke McKee. But we're actually taking it from a different angle. We're trying to understand the reasons why the laws there have actually changed in quite a draconian manner against gay people. And of course, this is in the context of the story that I covered a couple of weeks ago about the little boy who was traded around the world like a bag of meat to be used by pedophiles for pornography. And of course, this little boy had been featured in an Australian Puff piece about how wonderful gay marriage is. And you really got to wonder about the research abilities of the ABC and whether there's an agenda going on there, that story went right through and was broadcast on ABC radio, and no one picked up on the issues about the little boy. No one saw any problem with it until, in fact, the American man was finally convicted quite recently of a series of crimes which will have him locked up for the rest of his life. But the questions here about gay rights. Now, Luke, in the previous segment there, you were going through some statistics about gay families in Australia, and we've seen there has certainly been an increase. It's on the rise. But what else can you tell us about the statistics? What other aspects of the statistics can you tell us, for example, about paedophilia?
Well, this just gets down to Australian statistics. Gays are about 3% of all Australian couples. And from that 3%, there is a 1 to 11 ratio, or about 95.5% of all paedophilia. And many, many studies have concurred that gay androphile or gay men paedophiles are more prolific. And they the average victim of a heterosexual one's about between 3 and 19. And the gay ones are from 20 to 250, very prolific. There's been, even the Kinsey study mentioned a very prolific one. And in Australia, we had Robert Dolly Dunn. And the other thing it comes in...
What was the percentage again? Sorry, could you just repeat for the audience, what was the actual statistics on the percentage of paedophiles?
On the report I cited earlier, it's a 1 to 11 ratio.
1 to 11. So that's 1 in 11 gay men are pedophiles. Is that, we're talking about men, not lesbians? We're talking about gay homosexual men?
Yeah. So compare 50% of the Australian, 48% of the Australian heterosexual population versus 1.5 of the gay male population. And they do about 9.5% of all crimes against children.
So you're just dropping out a little there, Luke. That they do 9.5%?
Of crimes against children from 1.5% of the population.
So 1.5% of the population is responsible for 9.5% of the crimes against children. That's almost a 10 to 1 ratio. So what we're saying is that gay men are overrepresented in crimes against children. That's a really surprising... I didn't even think that would be the case. What are we to take from that? I mean, it's quite shocking, isn't it?
Well, the thing is here is we're treading on dangerous ground right now, because if we cite these academic studies, and this is the most cited one, we could be accused of inciting hatred and gay vilification laws in Australia. And, you know, it's happened before. There's been lots of notable cases. The one that strikes me personally the most is Lola Scott, the highest ranking woman in the police force in New South Wales before Catherine Burns. And who is believed that she mentored her. And the Community Action Against Homophobia website claims her to be a lesbian. Anyway, without even saying her name, there was a scandal regarding immunity being granted to Australia's most infamous pedophile, Robert Dolly Dunn. And that's what led to the Woodrow Commission Against Pedophilia. A former detective wrote a book called Dirty Deeds. His name was Glenn McNamara, and he gave a submission still on the Australian Senate inquiry page regarding immunity being granted to him so he could go to Melbourne and rape more boys. And when Alan Jones alluded to a senior police officer, he was taken to the Anti-Discrimination Board and sued without even naming her. So, you know, what, you know, there's no free speech about this. You have to go with what's politically correct or you could be jailed. And in my case, I've actually had a stoush with the Anti-Discrimination Board, and regarding a gay neighbour that was arrested for same-sex domestic violence, we talked about it before, yeah. I won't go over the details again, sending not one but two homosexual gay and lesbian liaison officers to the officer in charge, OIC in police jargon, of investigating a heterosexual. Now, it took me a few months to find out these confirmed facts, which nobody could probably dispute. I won't name the officers on air, but if I'm asked on my Twitter account, Homo Cop Victim, I will. I'm not afraid to do it. And proof, and provide proof for these claims, be it audio recordings or websites or whatever else. Now, I was discriminated against. My first ever radio interview back in 2008, when I was very shy, was on David Oldfield. I could barely even muffle the word out lesbian. And David Oldfield said something very poignant. It's, quote, the thing I don't quite get is why two man-hating lesbians were sent to your house. Now, the head of the Anti-Discrimination Board, Stephen Kirk-Yasharian, Order of Australia, says, in your letter, you describe the complaint as both gender discrimination and sexual preference discrimination by the New South Wales Police.
Right.
And then he also goes on to say the police weren't giving me a service. Now, I beg to differ. I mean, I was trying to make a complaint about someone doing malicious property damage they ignored, which they had to confess to my landlord, and I have a statement of the landlord to that. And when confronted with allegations in court, they didn't want to give evidence to defend themselves. So, you know, I'm a victim of a crime, but I'm not allowed to complain because my office is discriminating against me.
So what you're saying is that this whole story illustrates the fact that there is some sort of infiltration of our society with this. The gay ideology somehow has managed to position itself within the police, obviously within organisations that are involved in adoption and marriage, and of course the ABC. As we can see, there is an incredible bias, certainly in Australia, to promote gay lifestyles, and of course we've seen it in schools that gay
pride program,
program
is the most
gay lifestyle is taught in schools.
And now they're pushing it. Now that's being extended to Muslim schools and Catholic schools by removing the exemptions from the Anti-Discrimination Act.
So in fact, they must teach gay and lesbian issues in Muslim schools as well now in Australia.
And not expel alleged gays or Muslims, like gay Catholic students and gay Muslim students must stay in the school, and the school say they would be expelled with love and it'll help them find a new place if that's the way they are.
And I believe that we must also, under the new laws, allow gay marriage to be celebrated in a mosque. Is that correct?
Oh, God. It's very interesting. The Marriage Act says that someone can refuse to do a marriage for whatever reason, but you can also refuse to sell your house to anyone you want to. But the Anti-Discrimination is above that. Okay, so
right.
The Greens have his name, David Shoebridge, says he wants to see a full and total exemption from religious organisations, and Clover Moore's henchman, Alex Greenwich, gay rights activist turned politician, is probably pushing for that. I have questioned them on the issue, and they don't want anyone to know what the bill is until it hits the floor of the House. They're saying, oh, we have to wait for the parliamentary drafting service. But based on who he's allied with and what they've asked, it's going to be a total non-exemption. So there was the first case of discrimination I remember seeing on the ABC News when I was a little kid in Perth. Was an Aboriginal woman who went to a real estate agent and you know, couldn't rent a house, and her white friend went and she could, and that was a fair case, I think, and she won. But then there's other cases like a Christian Conference Centre owned by Brethren Church in Victoria sued for not allowing gay sex education on church land when a gay charity wanted to take a whole bunch of country kids, underage, of course, away from their homes and keep them for a week down on, I think it's Phillip Island, and, you know, and sleep in bunk beds next to them. And the church said no, and they'll fine $5,000 plus much more in legal fees. And so church suing is already happening, and that exemption was put through because they said it wasn't a place of worship. So technically, schools would also be exempt from this case law, but no, they're going for the place of worship.
That is really, really extraordinary. Of course, Australia is a kind of extreme example in the world, but I'm sure the trends are there in other countries. I'm sure Canada and the US and the UK and Europe have similar trends. We're going to talk about that more after the break. Please stay with us. Truth News Radio. And I'm talking to Luke McKee today about gay laws, anti-discrimination, changes to the laws in Russia, but also questions about anti-discrimination laws which protect gay people in Australia, which seem to be quite extreme. And as we saw there in the last segment, you know, if you have a school and the people running the school don't really want to teach gay sex education, they can be sued. If a church doesn't want to celebrate a gay marriage, well, they may be forced to if legislation being put forward by the Greens is actually allowed through. It would be considered as...
It was the Greens. It was the Greens. But now it's independent politician Alex Greenwich.
Okay,
and,
right, yeah.
It was a total non-exemption for religious organisations, it's believed to be. And theoretically, the imam of a mosque, as I said, this hasn't been tested in court yet, it's theoretical, but if there is a total non-exemption as proposed by the Greens previously, by Kate Flanagan and David Shoebridge, it will become a crime for a mosque not to do an equal marriage, and the imam will have to choose between paying the fine or having every other moderate Muslim cleric on the earth issuing a fatwa for his death, which is a death penalty for subverting Islam. And that is the most clear-cut case of religious persecution and human rights abuse that I can think of. And in my case, this Stephen Kirkisharian went on to say, only homosexuality is covered in the Act, not sexual preference, not heterosexuality. I don't have the power to investigate the complaint, because you are a heterosexual, you are a lawful target of discrimination. And I want to go on to say, just like blacks were lawfully discriminated against in South Africa by the whites, for example, and also had a segment that had every time in South Africa, when a white pointed a finger at a black man, there would be a white officer in charge, and the gay and lesbian liaison officer framework enables that. So I would like to say it's gay apartheid and it's bigotry. It is bigotry in its purest form in Australia. So the and the guy who wrote that to me, I mean, who discriminates and who's racist is always different people have different opinions. For example, he was almost blocked going to Gallipoli by the Turks because, you know, he's he makes a big deal out of the Armenian debts, and the Turkish had 2.5 million deaths in that saga. And, you know, many people died and, you know, someone claims genocide and no one's talking about the biggest genocide in the world.
But now, look, let's just for the sake of, just to sort of bring a bit of balance into this. I mean, let's be honest here and acknowledge that for many, many years, for many decades in Australian society, gay people were persecuted. I mean, you had pufta bashes, right? Going down into the parks at night, you know, beating the crap out of people. You had intolerance of homosexuality, and it was actually outlawed for many years, and really only in the 1970s did it start to change. So, you know, people listening to what we're saying tonight might feel that we're abandoning a human rights cause, and in fact, basically taking some sort of reactionary, homophobic position, and I'm certainly not. But I mean, where do we stand now? I mean, sorry to bombard you with questions, but I mean, where do we stand now?
I think the pendulum has swung too far to one extreme when religious organisations are deemed exempt. And what we've got is we've got, like, what I see on the internet is I see Tom Patton on the Alex Greenwich homepage saying, if you want to be exempt from the anti-discrimination laws, you should be exempt from public funding too. Thanks, Alex Greenwich. But gays are exempt from the Act. You just heard from the chief of the Anti-Discrimination Board. And the ACON Council gets $5 million of funding a year, not for providing a health benefits, just for health marketing. And they spend $133,356, and there's a video on my YouTube channel about this, to promote the website Wherever Sex Happens that has a microblogging feature for gays to talk about cemetery sex, mosque sex, church sex.
You're joking.
Sex with dogs,
are you saying this
sex,
was funded?
Sex with lambs.
Was this publicly funded?
Correct. The funding report is linked on the YouTube video from a university in Victoria.
I mean, that's just sick, isn't it? I mean, it's really outrageous. There's some sort of decadence. You know, I feel like what's actually happened with our society. I know towards the end of the Roman Empire, there was this decadence, you know, this fall into completely perverted behavior that seems to coincide with the decline of civilizations. But the enshrining of this as a right and indeed persecuting people who in fact don't endorse it and then enshrining laws to not discriminate against people who want to forcibly enforce these perversions on to people, it's even more weird and twisted and sick than you can describe.
Freedom of thought, error. The United Nations Declaration of Human Rights says you have the right to freedom of thought, freedom of religion. And in America, they have the First Amendment. And the person who got the gay marriage court case in America, I saw him on CNN, I can't recall his name, but he said, we have to protect our opponent's First Amendment rights. We shouldn't be doing this anti-discrimination board, anti-vilification stuff, because people have, some people, especially religious groups that I'm not affiliated with, because Reverend Fred Nile, of course, voted for 60C Crimes Act, okay? People have rights, and some people shouldn't be more equal than others, to quote George Orwell's Animal Farm. Yeah. And it's about equality. I'm fighting for gay equality. I believe that all police officers should be capable of doing the bidding for a gay person, and the majority of them shouldn't be deemed inferior. Because if you imagine having whites only investigating blacks, and then having it run by the KKK, which I would like to compare to ACON with what they're, you know, they've been confronted with their website advertising this for months, and it's still on there. If you go to wherever sex happens.com and go to, you know, where it happened for you, you watch up all the comments pop up. I didn't put them there. They've been there for months.
Now, this is an Australian website. Can I just get the URL for it quickly?
Wherever sex happens.com. And if you go to my YouTube video, YouTube channel, youtube.com/HOJURUKU, it means Aussie, Luke in Korean, Hojuruku. You can see it. And there are other videos there and my other interviews, and I even put up a link to a hit piece that was done on me recently accusing me of being homophobic. I mean, I was interviewed on 2SER, I mean, the queer noise, I mean, with gays supporting my cause. So, you know, I just want equality, because if the gays push it too far, they're going to make themselves a target for hatred. I mean, they're picking a fight with Islam and all the more conservative churches like the Catholics, who in their official book, bulletins, say this is a human rights abuse. I mean, they're, you know, if what this guy Tom Patton said earlier, well, this ACON is true. If you want to be exempt from anti-discrimination laws, you should be defunded. He says the AIDS Council of New South Wales should be defunded $5 million back to the Australian taxpayer.
I'm just actually trying to load that site. It's actually not loading for me. Can you just give a brief description of this site, Wherever Sex Happens? What is the theme of the site? What's it about? What's it for?
Oh, it starts with sexual safety, but with their $133,000 funding, you think they could moderate what goes on there. They've got people's numbers for sexual hookups. It's basically a toilet box wall. And the other thing which is very scary is beatproject.org.au, which campaigns for gay public sex in children's parks.
Yes, and I've heard about this. And, in fact, I went to a protest that I didn't actually realise when I went to it that it was going to be about gay rights. I was invited to it a couple of years ago by a friend of mine who was interested in the work I was doing, and he invited me to come to a protest, and I didn't really research it thoroughly as to what I was attending, but it turned out it was actually a gay rights protest, and this was in Newtown in Sydney, and incredible as it may seem, I mean a lot of people might think you're being ridiculous in saying they demand rights to have sex in public toilets. They do, and this is what the theme of that protest was. They wanted the police to give them carte blanche to basically get up to whatever funny business they want in public toilets at night. I mean, and I was like, can this be real? Is this, is this what you're protesting about?
Their website says go to the anti-discrimination board to complain against police that stop you doing it, even though it's a crime. But you can't complain if you want to do heterosexual public sex because you're not gay, because some people are more equal than others under the Act. Gay people want equality. They should not exempt themselves from the Anti-Discrimination Act before religion. And they should put faith that all police officers can be trained to treat them fairly. And that, because if you have, you know, homosexual police, as my case show, have trouble arresting their own kind if they make a false statement. It perverts justice.
Absolutely. Luke, just we're about to run out of time. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I really want to briefly address the ABC story, because this is how we started talking about all this. We haven't got much time left. I just want to get a brief take from you on the ABC story, the Ginger Gorman story about the married couple that were presented as the most wonderful gay couple in the world and basically presented as a wonderful puff piece in support of gay marriage, which turned out to be, you know, a kind of a lifting up of something from the depths of hell, really. I mean, what's your take on that? How did the ABC end up doing that? What's really going on?
God, what's really going on? And she deleted all her tweets from... These people were calling the church hateful when they were in America in the CSU Long Beach 49 student newspaper in 99. The link is on my ABC video. If you go to tinyurl.com/ABC fucks pedos, you can see that. And then after the story broke, she tried to claim photo credits from Sydney Morning Herald Nick Ralston for putting that child's uncensored picture on hundreds of gay rights activists' site as a poster boy for gay families and child rape.
Just unbelievable. Look, unfortunately, we have run out of time, Luke, but I will get you on again soon, and we'll go over some more details. It's been awesome having you
on,
mate.
Not the gay stuff. The police corruption stuff that I know of before the cycle broke.
We'll get into all of that. Thanks. It's been great having you on. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you so much.
And that's our show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, it's not our show for this week. Join us for the second hour where I'll be getting Josh Jackson on to talk about the internet and your freedoms. Stay with us.